It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios, welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me, or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You all right?
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4-1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
President Trump took major steps today to resurrect the Keystone XL and Dakota Access pipelines, another opportunity for the president to undo Obama-era actions.
We're going to renegotiate some of the terms, and if they'd like, we'll see if we can get that pipeline built. A lot of jobs, 28,000 jobs. Great construction jobs.
The Twitter sphere lit up with protest from environmental groups. Earth Justice condemns President Trump's executive order on Keystone XL and Dakota Access oil pipelines, wrote one group. But from House Speaker Paul Ryan, praise. Thanks to President Trump's executive order, the Keystone pipeline and the Dakota Access pipeline can finally be built. It's about time. The president also signed orders to streamline the permitting and manufacturing process for pipelines and other infrastructure projects and took steps to ensure when they are built, they're built with American steel.
We will build our own pipeline. We will build our own pipes. That's what it has to do with. Like we used to in the old days.
The president began his day promoting the automobile industry, hosting leaders from the Big Three and others for breakfast, another listening session to find ways of keeping jobs at home.
We're going to make the process much more simple for the auto companies and for everybody else that wants to do business in the United States. I think you're going to find this to be from very inhospitable to extremely hospitable.
Amid all the talks about jobs and infrastructure, the president today revealed he is very close to naming his choice to fill the Supreme Court seat left vacant by the death of Antonin Scalia last year. Appeals Court judges Neil Gorsuch, Thomas Hardiman, and William Pryor are said to be the front runners.
Sometime next week, I'll be making my decision. This week, we'll be announcing. Next week, we have outstanding candidates, and we will pick a truly great Supreme Court justice. But I'll be announcing it sometime next week.
All right. So, Sandy Rios with you. That was John Roberts on Special Report last night on Fox. Well, let me speak to the last part first. Can I just say, wow? Whew. All right. It's interesting to try to cover what's going on in Washington, but I'm going to give it a shot. Let me just say that the president, since that report, tweeted out that he's going to make the announcement for his Supreme Court nominee next Thursday. My best contacts say that it's going to be Neil Gorsuch. And he's the judge from Colorado. He has the strong support of Princeton professor Robbie George, who is highly thought of among conservative circles. I'll have more to say about that. But it's going to be a fight. It is going to be an absolute all-out brawl. You can bet. You know, Chuck Schumer is already saying, he had already said no matter who Donald Trump appoints, we're going to fight it tooth and nail. So they will, and they will try to destroy whoever the candidate is. And I'll bring you more on the candidates. It looks as though William Pryor, who we had some concerns about. Now, look, I'm speaking early on. Donald Trump could appoint anyone he wants a week from tomorrow, but I don't think he's going to appoint William Pryor. At least that's information that's coming my way. How do I know? I don't know. But I'm just telling you, I think it may be Neil Gorsuch from Colorado, and we will talk more about that. You certainly will know everything about him. You'll know all the terrible things about him for sure by the time the left gets through, but we'll see if we can't balance that out, and that'll be a big topic of discussion for us, no doubt. Well, you heard John talk about all the executive orders that the president signed yesterday, five more. But and what he's doing is, as he sits at the desk or wherever he is signing these, he actually reads the order so that people can understand what he's doing. And I want to take just a second. John did a great report there, but I want to take just a second to sort of flesh this out. We know that the Keystone XL pipe and the Dakota Access Pipelines have both been sidelined by environmental interests and, of course, chair-led by the President of the United States, Barack Obama. And they have been tanked. You know, the Keystone Pipeline was in the works for years. And finally, they said they just gave up. So this is an important for economic growth and for industry. This is an important move. And by the way, my understanding is the Keystone and the Dakota Access Pipelines are way below ground. They are not going to be creating any kind of an environmental threat to the Indian tribes that have been protesting. Of course, they've been stoked by the left, the far left. There's no question about that. And whipped into a frenzy themselves, worried about what it might do to their tribe. And then, of course, some of their tribe are probably leftists themselves. But this is what he signed: these two orders on Keystone and Dakota, and then three more sweeping directives. And I want to read this to you. Trump said this is about streamlining the incredibly cumbersome, long, horrible permitting process. Of course, he's reversing the Obama administration policy. He emphasized that the construction isn't a done deal. It's something that's subject to a renegotiation of terms by us. We'll see if we can get the pipeline built. Lots of jobs, 28,000 jobs. And Michael Brune of the Sierra Club, of course, whether he tweeted this or wrote it, who knows, a statement. He said, President Trump will live to regret his actions this morning. A wall of resistance like the likes of which he never imagined. Well, I don't doubt that. Environmentalists are, they have had their way now for the last long bit of time. Even George W. Bush began to waver on environmentalism and listen to some of his advisors who I don't think were wise men and sort of bend the curve toward the environmentalists. And so this is a big shock to them. Now, the first memorandum, and by the way, I'm reading this from USA Today, a memorandum expediting the Keystone XL pipeline, a proposed 1,179-mile cross-border pipeline from Alberta to Nebraska. In unusual language, referring to a specific private company in a presidential directive, Trump invited pipeline company TransCanada to promptly resubmit its application. He also ordered the Secretary of State to make a decision within 60 days, fast-tracking existing procedural requirements. So within 60 days. And TransCanada has already responded and said they will resubmit it. So this is going to be interesting. The second thing he signed was a memorandum directing the Secretary of the Army to review and approve in an expedited manner the Dakota Access Pipeline, a 1,172-mile pipeline from North Dakota to Illinois, subject of heated protests by American Indian groups and environmentalists. It will need approval from the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers. All right, so then those are the two on the pipelines, and then he signed three more orders, which also are really amazing. You know, if you know anything about the steel industry, you know that we used to have a powerful, vibrant steel industry in the United States, certainly in near Chicago, which is, of course, my town, my hometown. Northwest Indiana had huge steel mills. U.S. Steel was right there. I think they may still be operating, but hardly. There's hardly any steel produced in the United States anymore because of the regulations and because of opening the borders because of free trade, which I'm not going to badmouth free trade, but I think free trade has gone way too far. And I think when free trade crossed the line, it's when it became the bottom line over the best interest of the American people. When corporate executives decided that it was somehow righteous to save money at the expense of their own country and the jobs of their fellow Americans, I have a problem with that. I've had a problem with that for a long time. Gotten in bits spats, you know, with my business friends over this. But Donald Trump is changing that. So let me read what he signed: a memorandum requiring the Secretary of Commerce to come up with a plan to mandate American-made steel for all new, expanded, or retrofitted pipelines in the United States. American-made steel. Not from China, not from these other countries that have benefited by the loss of these steel plants, the loss of jobs, but American steel. And he said the plan is due in 6 months. And Trump said going to put a lot of steel workers back to work. And then the next memorandum to all federal agencies to review manufacturing regulations. The Secretary of Commerce is required to seek input from the public on how to streamline those rules for 60 days. So they're going to get rid of all these regulations, get rid of the ones that don't make sense, and free business up to actually do their work. And the last one was an executive order fast-tracking approval for high-priority infrastructure projects. Under his order, Trump's order, any governor or cabinet secretary can ask for a project to be designated as high priority. If the chairman of the White House Council on Environmental Quality approves, the project will go to the front of the line for any agency required to review and approve the project. And this is what Donald Trump said about that. This is the expediting of environmental reviews and approvals for high-priority infrastructure projects. We can't be in an environmental process for 15 years if a bridge is falling down. And so he says, let's start building. The regulatory process in this country has become a tangled up mess and very unfair to people. So that's what the president did in terms of the executive orders yesterday. John also mentioned that he met with the largest automakers. And of course, you know about that. He's gonna reduce, his goal is to reduce the environmental constraints on automakers. He wants them to come back home, put their factories here, put American workers in place. The stunning thing about that meeting, I guess, was that opponents, you know, competitors, bitter competitors in some cases, were sitting arm to arm in that room and working with Donald Trump, so, or at least listening to what he had to say. So that's pretty interesting. Now, John Roberts also, you have to know, John is not a conservative, and he comes from, you know, a different background, and it comes through in his reports. I want you to hear how he started the report on Donald Trump, and then we'll hear the last part of it. John Roberts again from last night.
The sheer volume of news coming out of this White House in just the first couple of days dwarfs anything that we have seen in recent memory. But the president has still not shaken his campaign era propensity to step on his own message.
All right, so this was the heading. Before he said all that I played at the top of the hour, this is how he set it up. So in other words, he did all these great things, but look, he stepped in it again. Okay, so then John goes on at the end of the report to explain what he means. Let's listen, then I want to have some comments about that.
Despite the magnitude of news coming out of the White House today, it was again overshadowed by a message-robbing remark by the president. Meeting with congressional leaders last night, President Trump insisted he would have won the popular vote had 3 to 5 million people not voted illegally. This morning, the House Speaker said he'd seen nothing to back that up.
Look, I've already commented on that. I've seen no evidence to that effect, and I've made that very, very clear.
In the daily briefing today, citing no evidence to support Trump's claim, Press Secretary Sean Spicer said the president firmly believes what he said.
The president does believe that. He has stated that before. I think he stated his concerns of voter fraud and people voting illegally during the campaign.
But when asked if the White House would seek an investigation into what would amount to massive voter fraud,
okay, you get the point. He said the press secretary said no, blah, blah, blah. So that's the thing that John wanted to zero in on. But I want you to know, from people that I know who are in the business of tracking illegal immigration and what they do, there is tremendous concern about illegal immigrant voter fraud. And there's a study that I want to point you to this morning that came out of Old Dominion University. It just came out from their Department of Political Science. The title is Do Non-Citizens Vote in U.S. Elections? And they examine participation rates by non-citizens. They also say that non-citizen voters likely gave Senate Democrats the pivotal 60th vote needed to overcome filibusters in order to pass health care reform. And that was over the Al Franken seat. I know that story. But in the body of this, I can't go into all the details of it. Perhaps we'll talk to the authors of this study, but this is one paragraph I want to share with you. How many non-citizen voters were likely cast in 2008? Taking the most conservative estimate, it's anywhere between 38,000 at the very minimum to nearly 2.8 million at the maximum. So there are studies, even though, you know, Paul Ryan and others and John Roberts don't seem to know about them, these things have been reported. So just so you know, there's the fight goes on. In fact, I want to talk about the immigration things that the president is likely to sign today because it's pretty amazing, and we'll do that next. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Financial business. We manage a couple of trusts, and some estates, and of course, our own monies too.
Courtney Trotter talks about the charitable gift annuity from the AFA Foundation.
I understand annuities about as much as anyone, I guess, can. So I just felt the charitable gift annuity was a win-win situation for many people that still are generating income and still have assets, because you never know when you may have to draw down on something like that. And if you don't ever have to, then it's even a better gift to get to a really good foundation like AFA, a very solid investment, a good way to help do the Lord's work, and it's there to help us as well.
Find out if the charitable gift annuity can work for you by calling the AFA Foundation at 800-326-4543, extension 345.
I feel so hopeless.
Is there any hope? I just feel like there's no hope at all.
Is there any hope?
Get hope.
Sometimes we get so tired, we just lose hope.
That's TWR President Lauren Libby.
Hope in life itself. A guy named Elijah experienced that kind of bone-crushing tiredness. He'd been in conflict with a political leader and his wife. In fact, the conflict was so bad that Elijah gave up hope for life itself. In the midst of all that, he sensed a small voice talking to him saying, "There are people who share your same values and feel the same way you do, and I know who they are." In other words, don't lose hope. Jesus still does that today. As we tell him about our seemingly impossible situations in which there is no hope, he can still speak to us with a small voice, giving perspective and hope.
Need more hope? We have resources waiting for you, including a free devotional. You'll find them at GetHopeRadio.com. That's GetHopeRadio.com.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with this Fox News and commentary next. How would you like to finish your degree online? Truett McConnell University makes that possible with their top-notch online program. You can even earn a master's in theology. For 70 years, Truett McConnell University has been preparing students to fulfill God's high calling on their lives, on campus or online. A degree that can not only change your life, but also your workplace. Truett.edu is the website. That's Truett.edu. For the first time in 4 years, fewer Americans watched National Football League games on television. Viewership down 8% from last year, the steepest drop-off in the past 10 years. Some say it's because there are just too many commercials. Others blame non-competitive games. Still others say there are just too many games during the week. But I believe there's a very simple two-word reason for the decline. Colin Kaepernick. Week after week, the San Francisco quarterback disrespected America, taking a knee during the national anthem, thumbing his nose at those who defend the land of the free, the home of the brave. The NFL refused to punish Mr. Kaepernick, in essence, giving their tacit approval. Americans are a forgiving people, but when it comes to overpaid, self-centered athletes who disrespect the nation, well, they'd just rather change the channel. I'm Todd Starnes.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
I was marching for all the people that didn't have papers. My brothers, too.
10-year-old Fiorella Mendoza can breathe easier today after the Trump administration said it would not keep the president's campaign promise to immediately deport those brought to the U.S. illegally as children.
His priority is first and foremost focused on people who pose a threat to people in our country.
But White House spokesman Sean Spicer warned the reprieve may be temporary.
He's considering to make sure that his cabinet-level team starts to organize and create a plan to move forward.
The decision to focus on criminal aliens is simple. Numbers.
I would expect ICE to start focusing on more of the criminal alien population that were exempt from enforcement under the Obama administration.
Out of 2 million criminal aliens, ICE deported just over 60,000 in 2016, a six-year decline. Out of 12 million illegal immigrants, the number deported from the interior fell from almost 250,000 to just 65,000 last year.
Whether it starts with the hardcore criminal aliens and then trickles down over time to other priorities, We can't do much worse than we've been doing for the past 8 years, which is virtually nothing.
94% of those removed by Homeland Security were priority one, convicted of felonies or at least three misdemeanors. The administration has not said whether President Trump will lower the bar to include all those arrested, from DUI and robbery to burglary and drug use.
And that is the legal challenge ahead. How will President Trump handle sanctuary cities that won't honor detainers, having decided on their own who will and won't be deported back to Mexico and beyond?
That was William Longinus on Fox News last night. You know what? Just since William gave that report, there are lots of things to say about what's going to happen today on immigration in the White House. I think it's going to be a blitz, much like we saw yesterday, but on the issue of immigration. And so let me tell you what we're expecting. Now, Mark Krikorian, who you've heard on the show many times, Mark wrote an article just a couple of days ago entitled, "Is Trump Going to Cancel DACA?" That's the Dreamer Act, or not, the executive order by the president. It was illegal, and it gave, you know, so-called Dreamers Social Security numbers and access to welfare, state driver's licenses. It gave them, you know, pretty much the privileges of citizenship. And it was all done by executive order. And according to Mark's count, there are 600 and about 800 approved every day under this program. And they want President Trump to stop this, at least put a stay on any new approvals. And so that's what that report was all about. It's Sean Spicer and another person who, not Kellyanne, but someone else who speaks for the White House, has sort of been hedging on the whole business of reversing DACA. And that was a promise that President Trump made. So we'll see what happens today on that. I don't know that anything I'm going to tell you now specifically addresses that. So just stay with me, because there are lots of things that he's going to be doing today. You're going to hear it later in the morning. We talked about illegal immigrant voting, and I played that clip from John Roberts, and, you know, that Trump is claiming millions voted illegally, and that's why Hillary, inferring that that's the reason Hillary had more popular votes than he did on record. And I want you to know that we're going to put a piece by the Daily Signal on a Facebook. It just came in my inbox, and I think it's easier to read than the study. And it will show you some research from Hans von Spakovsky and others about the point they want to make, that there were illegal immigrant votes, significant ones, in the last election. So you can read that and share it with other people. Also, in regard to that, now, this is a little confusing, and I'll just tell you what I understand about it. You know, Texas had their voter ID laws overturned in the lower courts in Texas, and they appealed to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court on Monday sent it back to Texas. Now, from one report I heard early was that that was bad news, but I'm reading now from National Constitution Center that it wasn't such a bad thing. That the John Roberts wrote in his opinion that they felt that Texas had just appealed it too soon. It goes back now down to Texas, and they are expecting, it's possible, and I'm saying it's likely, I would say it's likely, that the Trump administration will switch the government's position on strict enforcement of voter ID. And if they do that, they will join in with Texas back to the lower courts to argue the case. What that means legally, I'm not in a position to explain that to you. It's just that it's kind of I think you're likely to see that happen. I think that, you know, good voter ID laws just make sense. And we have to have citizenship, and we have to have voter ID. We have to have something that indicates that we belong to this country, and we have rights that don't apply to just anyone who crosses the border. And certainly one of those main rights is the right to vote and choose our candidates to speak, you know, speak the language so that you even know who they are, what you're voting for, to have a vested interest in the country, to have the right to vote and select the leaders based on your allegiance and your loyalty and your own home being in the place where you're voting. But I digress. All right. Along with that is an article in Daily Caller this morning, E-Verify could soon be the law of the land. Now, E-Verify is a great tool. I remember when they first introduced it, I'll read Senator Grassley actually said this. E-Verify is a proven tool for employers, including myself, that helps reduce incentives for illegal immigration and safeguards job opportunities for Americans and other legal workers. Expanding the system to every workplace will improve accountability for all businesses and take an important step toward putting American workers first. Right now, it's a voluntary system. There are about 700,000 businesses that use E-Verify, but Grassley's bill that he introduced on Tuesday would require all employers to use E-Verify. They would fine employers who knowingly hire illegal workers $25,000 apiece. That's a pretty stiff penalty, pretty good incentive to make sure that you're hiring people who are here legally or who are citizens. And so that's you can bet that the Trump administration will be supporting that as well. Now, the executive order is expected today. Let me go to this first. This is from Reuters. Donald Trump is expected to sign executive orders starting on Wednesday that include a temporary ban on most refugees and suspension of visas for citizens of Syria and six other Middle Eastern and African countries. Trump tweeted that a big day was planned on national security on Wednesday, and he's expected to ban for several months the entry of refugees into the United States, except for religious minorities escaping persecution, until more aggressive vetting is in place. Did he not say he was going to do that? He did, and most Americans welcomed that. And could I reiterate to you again that way, way down on the list of people admitted into this country is a tiny, 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 I believe less than 1%, a percentage point of those coming in, Christians who are being persecuted in the Middle East. It's been all Muslim refugees coming in from the Middle Eastern countries. And that's just wrong. We know who the target of persecution is. Some, ISIS targets other Muslims who don't strictly adhere to Sharia. That's true, too. But to block Christians and make it hard for them to come in has just been unconscionable. And so that's going to be changed. As far as I can see here, this is going to change. Trump in his tweet said a big day is planned on national security tomorrow. Among many other things, we will build the wall. So he's expected to sign the first of these orders at the Department of Homeland Security. His head of Department of Homeland Security was just sworn in, Kelly. Now, the thing about General John Kelly, you know, I believe that I told you, if I didn't, I probably should, that a couple of these generals are not national security hawks, and people who are concerned about immigration are not necessarily thrilled with these picks. And I'll give you just an example of why. Let's see. This is a different article. John Kelly, when he was being grilled, here we go, by the Senate, Kelly noted that... This is the Washington Post. He struck a markedly different tone from the president during his confirmation hearing, saying the controversial southwest border might not be built anytime soon. Kelly noted that when he was a Marine officer in Iraq, his forces secure stability in part by reaching out to clerics and other Muslim leaders. He vowed to promote tolerance, and he didn't think it was appropriate to target any group of people solely based on religious or ethnic background, including through the development of a registry. So now it says, the Washington Post reports, Kelly is under intense pressure from the White House to enforce the immigration crackdown on which Trump built his campaign. You know, I have to say, if Kelly does not do that, his term in office might be a short one. But that kind of illustrates some of the concerns that I heard expressed about him when he was the nomination. All right. Now, on the ban on refugees, I told you about that already. Also, on the border wall, he is expected, as I understand, also to sign orders relating to the wall and to sanctuary cities. Who knows what that's going to say? That's going to be interesting, isn't it? An effort to crack down on these localities will resonate with the Republican base, which has long criticized local officials who refuse to cooperate with federal immigration authorities. And by the way, he's meeting with... people whose children were killed by illegal immigrants in violent crimes this morning. So they're going to be there, too. The president of Mexico, Enrique Peña Nieto, I'm sorry if I mispronounced that to all my Spanish-speaking friends, will visit the U.S. next week to meet with Trump. The government has said in Mexico, has said it will not pay for that wall, even though Trump has said he's going to make Mexico pay for it. Well, I don't know anything about that, but we'll find out. I'm sure we will. All right, so it's going to be a very big day. We'll see if he talks about DACA, that Dreamers executive order that was illegal that President Obama signed. We'll see if President Trump addresses that. You know, I bet he will. Just saying, I bet he will, because he knows that immigration hawks who supported him are all over that, and they think he should stop the program immediately, at least stop the approval of whatever, I think I said 800 applicants a day. All right, I want to tell you another story. This is just amazing. I should have USA Today. They did a little report on this. Let's listen. Cut 9.
On Tuesday, Facebook condemnations of President Trump from a senior U.S. Secret Service agent were revealed during the past 7 months, including one in which she said she wouldn't want to take a bullet for him. The agent, Kerry O'Grady, leads the Secret Service's Denver district, which oversees coordination with Washington-based advance teams for all presidential candidate and presidential trips to the area. In her posts, O'Grady went on to view Trump's presidential candidacy as a disaster for the country, especially for women and minorities.
And that's actually a kind report. The Washington Examiner has a long report on Kerry O'Grady. Do you understand? I know you do. If you know anything about Secret Service, they are a pledge. They take an oath to protect and defend certainly the president and anyone that they are guarding. And they are expected to take a bullet for whoever they guard, whether they agree with them or not. And they do. You know, they hold their peace. They hold their political opinions. When have you ever seen a Secret Service agent on Facebook criticizing the president of the United States? And, you know, with the Secret Service, they, even though they're in different parts of the country, they can be transferred around. They can be called on to defend a president, protect a president or his whoever they're called upon to protect to any place, any time. So, and she has a senior post on this. So, well, I want to read you a little bit more about this because she said she wouldn't take a bullet for Donald Trump. Kerry O'Grady, special agent in charge of the Secret Service's Denver District, oversees coordination with Washington-based advance teams for all presidential candidate and presidential trips to the area, including all upcoming and future trips by the president, vice president, or Trump administration officials. Despite her senior security role, she has made her disdain for Trump and this incoming administration clear to her Facebook followers, who include current and former Secret Service agents and other people who were employees at the time of the posts. O'Grady's post triggered at least one complaint to the office that oversees investigations. In one Facebook post, O'Grady wrote 11:07 on a Sunday in October that she endorsed Hillary Clinton and said she would endure jail time rather than taking a bullet for what she regarded as a disaster for America. In the same post, she mentions the Hatch Act, and you have to know that the Hatch Act means that, like people, like when my husband was with the FBI, he could not express any political views. He could not campaign for a candidate. They cannot be partisan. It's a hard, fast rule. And so she says in her post, as a public servant for nearly 23 years, I struggle not to violate the Hatch Act. So I keep quiet and skirt the median. To do otherwise can be a criminal offense for those in my position, despite the fact that I'm expected to take a bullet for both sides. But this world has changed, and I have changed, and I would take jail time over a bullet or an endorsement for what I believe to be a disaster to this country and the strong and amazing women and minorities who reside here. Hatch Act be blanked. I am with her. All right, so it's more than that. She also, she took the post down, and then she tried to make excuses. She said she was reacting to news about Trump sexually assaulting women. Okay, fine, but you know what? That's no excuse. She, you know, she is the quintessential female. She can't control her mouth or her emotions. Her job is something that she... What Secret Service agent does this? You would think they would have spoken up about Donald Trump or the Clintons, and they say very little because there's a code of honor, but not so much with her. There's more to say about her. She posted a logo for the Women's March on her Facebook. She said, none of these women represent me. Somebody posted on her Facebook, and she said, all of these women represent me. Proud to say it, at Nasty. And it goes on, and she said more things. It's just pretty disgusting. We'll see what happens. There have been some complaints. She should not be serving in the Secret Service. She has breached her oath, and really, she should not be in a position to be protecting and defending this administration based on what she herself has said. We'll put this on our Facebook page. from the Washington Examiner. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Hey, do you want to go on a vacation with a purpose? Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of the American Family Association and American Family Radio. A lot of people love to go to the beach. I'm one of them. How about the mountains? Yeah, a lot of folks are raising their hand right now when I say the mountains. Well, this year, why don't you go with us on a spiritual heritage tour of Washington, D.C. and Mount Vernon and have a vacation with an educational and a spiritual purpose? If you'd like to go with us in June or September to D.C. and Mount Vernon, or our separate tour to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown, we'd love to have you join us. Just find out all the information at spiritualheritagetours.com. Stephen McDowell of the Providence Foundation will join us as our historian, and he'll be commenting all along the way on our rich Christian heritage here in the U.S. We hope you can join us, spiritualheritagetours.com.
Physicians keep learning after medical school in order to better save lives. Shouldn't Christian leaders keep learning to better save souls? Hi, I'm Dr. John Nyhoff, president of Wesley Biblical Seminary in Jackson, Mississippi, and online around the world. Are you a Christian leader who thinks it's important to keep learning? WBS online weekend and evening classes allow graduate students to become better equipped to make disciples in a constantly changing world. For more information, visit wbs.edu.
Cross-examined with Frank Turek.
People almost invariably arrive at their beliefs not on the basis of proof, but on the basis of what they find attractive. And a lot of people find it attractive that Christianity might be false. And so they tend not to either investigate it, or they dismiss it, or they vociferously object to it because a creator interferes with what they want to do.
Cross-examined with Frank Turek, Saturday mornings at 9 Central and Sunday afternoons at 4 Central on AFR Talk.
First Love, the latest album release from Dennis Jernigan, features some of his earliest songs, as well as some new ones. It's a musical return to Dennis Jernigan's first love, Jesus.
You are my first love.
Psalm 32:7 says that He is our hiding place and He will surround us with songs of deliverance. I can't think of a better picture of a relationship than me singing to my God singing to me, and true intimacy is just as simple as this. Lord, here's my heart, into me see.
You are my strength when I am weak. You are the treasure that I seek. You are my all in all.
I stand amazed in all of your glory.
First Love by Dennis Jernigan. Available now for a suggested donation of $12.99 at afastore.net.
I stand amazed.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. The Trump administration has made huge strides in restoring ties with Israel frayed during Barack Obama's 8-year wrecking operation, capped by his parting diplomatic attacks and $200 million gift to the Jewish state's Palestinian enemies. But those opposed to such a rapprochement are insisting that President Trump renege on his promise to relocate the U.S. embassy to Israel's capital, Jerusalem. They threaten more of the radical Islamic terrorism Mr. Trump has vowed to eradicate from the face of the earth if he doesn't relent. If the president capitulates, however, one thing is sure. Sharia supremacists, among other adversaries, will perceive him as having submitted to enemy extortion, a surefire formula for more violent jihad. Mr. President, this is a prime opportunity to demonstrate your trademark Trump decisiveness. Just declare our existing consulate in Jerusalem the U.S. Embassy, and do it now. This is Frank Affney.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Sandy Rios back with you. Secret Service, I have a couple of more stories about that actually before we move on. This Secret Service agent, O'Grady, Kerry O'Grady, special agent in charge of the Secret Service's Denver district, the one who says she would not take a bullet for Donald Trump, and is so pro-Hillary Clinton and has just written some pretty alarming things really on her Facebook. I wanted to read a couple of other things just to show you. At 11:23, this is from the Washington Examiner. At 11:23 p.m. on Inauguration Day, she updated her profile picture to an artist rendering of Princess Leia with the words, "A woman's place is in the resistance." And, of course, The resistance, with its allusion to the rebels in the Star Wars movies, has become a moniker for those opposing Trump's presidency. And so she took those back, took those posts down. The Department of Homeland Security's Office of the Inspector General, which investigates agency complaints of misbehavior, received a complaint about those Facebook posts on October the 11th. In another pre-election post that no longer appears on her Facebook page, O'Grady shared a Huffington Post story on sexism with the headline, "Scott Baio Defends Trump's Sexism with More Sexism." And she accompanied her Facebook post of the story with the words, "One word, and it's vulgar, so I can't say it. One word, blank. How do you like them apples?" And in a post on late November, O'Grady shared Facebook remarks from the liberal news outlet Vox, which carried a photo of Jeff Sessions, who's going to be the Attorney General of the United States. And this is what it says. "Donald Trump nominates Jeff Sessions to serve as Attorney General. Just a few years ago, this would have been unimaginable." O'Grady added, "We are moving our civil rights into a period of bigotry, misogyny, and racism that this country has not tolerated for decades. Dark ages. I am horrified and dismayed beyond words." All right, I'm reading all of that because you're going to hear probably her defend herself, because I didn't read her defense in the Washington Examiner. I'll tell you right now, because basically she said, "Oh, no, I didn't mean that." She took the Facebook posts down and she said, "Oh, I love my job and I'm pledged to do my job." But you know what? You can't have it both ways. So I wanted you to know how egregious her comments were. That's why I keep talking about it. Speaking of Secret Service, Kellyanne Conway is now going to get Secret Service protection because she's been receiving suspicious white substances at her home. And so she says, "Because of what the press is now doing now to me, I have Secret Service protection. We have packages delivered to my house with white substances. That is a shame." And so Kellyanne is now going to be protected. And at the same time, you remember Madonna said on the stage of the Women's March that she had thought, you know, often about blowing up the White House. Well, a former Secret Service agent, her name is Byrne, can't see her first name, last name Byrne, was on with Breitbart Radio. And she said, "When she says that the White House should be blown up, do I think Madonna's going to do it? Not necessarily, but it's about this, meaning, motive, opportunity, and intent. The Secret Service knows," she said, "from years and years of experience, that people with issues can be motivated by hate and anger speech." And her point is that Madonna may herself not blow up the White House, but she has a huge impact on people, and someone might just take her up on that suggestion. And so, you know, it's a reasonable concern. I understand Madonna's being investigated for the remarks that she made. I'm sure it won't amount to much, but it should. Who could do that? Stand up on a stage in Washington, D.C. and say that you have thought about blowing up the White House and remained untouched? You know, you could not say anything. I remember some people made comments about Barack Obama and were arrested and investigated. And this is more than a comment. This is a direct threat. So she should be, regardless of her fame, she should be put to the paces on that. All right. So in terms of what's going on Capitol Hill, in terms of nominations, it's probably no surprise to you that Dr. Price from Georgia, who's going to be the Health and Human Services, hopefully he's the nominee, Tom Price, is under fire from the left. Mike Emanuel reported on it. Let's listen.
Yes or no, under the executive order, will you commit that no one will be worse off?
What I commit to, Senator, is working with you and every single member of Congress to make certain that we have the highest quality health care and that every single American has access to affordable coverage.
As he took on questions about replacing Obamacare, it was round two for Dr. Tom Price to be the next Secretary of Health and Human Services. It will be the Finance Committee that will vote on his nomination, and its Republican Chairman Orrin Hatch blasted attacks on Price.
None of those who say they oppose Dr. Price's nomination seemed to be talking about whether he is qualified. Instead, we've heard grossly exaggerated and distorted attacks on his views and his ethics.
Since Price has offered numerous plans to replace Obamacare, Democrats pushed for what's next.
President Trump said he's working with you on a replacement plan for the ACA, which is nearly finished and will be revealed after your confirmation. Is that true?
It's true that he said that, yes. I've had conversations with the president about health care, yes.
Missouri Democrat Claire McCaskill fired back at Republicans for going it alone.
We're about to repeal Obamacare without one Democratic vote. And what we have after the repeal is Trump care.
Democrats also attacked Price on some of his investments.
Yes or no, doesn't this show bad judgment?
No. Reality is that everything that I did was ethical, above board, legal, and transparent.
North Carolina Republican Richard Burr suggested criticism about Price's finances isn't fair.
Does it trouble you at all that you're, as a nominee to serve in this administration, that some want to hold you to a different standard?
We know what's going on here.
Price also made this promise to seniors.
I would just convey to the Medicare population in this nation that they don't have reason to be concerned.
All right, so that was Dr. Tom Price, who seems quite capable of acquitting himself before the committee, before the grilling. I thought it was interesting that Claire McCaskill said that the repeal of Obamacare will have to take place without one Democratic vote, when remember that the Obamacare was passed without one Republican vote in the dead of night, by pulling out all the stops on procedure. They pushed it through. They rammed it through. It was just the Democrats who voted for that. And so, you know, for now, 7 years, the Republicans have campaigned repeatedly. When they go out into their various states, they talk about how they oppose Obamacare. And that's how they were reelected, many of them. We voted to repeal it, and we're going to get rid of it, and we know how terrible it is, and we promise, but the Democrats won't let us do it. And so now, of course, they're in the majority, and they have the White House. And now what's happening? Well, let's see. Bill, I mentioned this yesterday, but it's worth repeating. Bill Cassidy of Louisiana, Susan Collins of Maine, Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia, and Johnny Isaacson of Georgia, they think that, you know, that if Democrats in Democratic states want to keep Obamacare, well, they should be able to keep it. And so that's their big soapbox right now. It's not going down well with the White House. In fact, I'll read from the Daily Signal to you. The White House seemed less than enthusiastic about one Senate Republican plan that would allow states to keep Obamacare, stressing President Donald Trump's opposition to mandates that drive down competition. On Monday, four Republican senators released the text of the Patient Freedom Act of 2017 to replace the Affordable Care Act, better known as Obamacare. The bill calls for repealing the mandates, but to allow states to choose to maintain the mandates, according to the bill's summary. So, you know, this is what I've been telling you. There is a divide among Republicans. They didn't mean it. I would like to see, and I'm sure somebody will write about this, if Bill Cassidy said he was going to get rid of Obamacare when he was running again. How about Susan Collins? Did she say that? And Shelley Moore Capito of West Virginia, did she promise the people of West Virginia she would do away with Obamacare? Did she brag about voting to repeal it? Did Johnny Isaacson of Georgia do the same? I just wonder, because now they're, you know, doing their best to maintain and keep Obamacare, at least in certain areas of the country. And Heritage Action actually did a poll. They took a survey on Obamacare repeal. And it shows... the survey showed that 70% of those surveyed agreed with this statement. The longer Congress waits to fulfill promises to repeal Obamacare, the less likely they are to be successful. All right, so many Republicans, I'm reading again from this Heritage Action memo, many Republicans want to make sure they don't repeal Obamacare without a replacement, but conservatives want to make sure the GOP doesn't try to back out of its promise. All right, so there you go. That's what's happening on Obamacare. Republicans are going to be going to Philadelphia tomorrow, I believe it is, for a retreat. Donald Trump will be speaking to them. You heard Congressman Dave Brat on with me yesterday. I asked him, because in the early days after Donald Trump became the nominee, it was reported to me from inside Congress that it was as though nothing had changed. The powers that be, which are not very good powers that be, were in full force trying to do all the bad things that they're always trying to do, and it was as though an election had not taken place. So I asked Congressman Brat yesterday if there now still seemed to be an ignoring of what President Trump wanted, a kind of business-as-usual feel. I asked if Donald Trump, by sheer force of his personality and the tools available to him, would be persuading leadership to do things differently. And actually, Congressman Brett encouraged me when he said, oh, no, things are very different now. He has a lot of power and a lot of sway, meaning Donald Trump. So we'll see. This will be an interesting retreat. He has a ton of squishes on his hand, both in the House and tremendous amount of them in the Senate proportionately. So we'll see what happens at that retreat. Oh, there's another story. Let's see. Do we have time? Yeah. Let's listen to Rich. Now, on the issue of Israel, this is really interesting. Let's listen to Rich Edson talk about the Trump administration and Israel. This is Cut 6.
A campaign promise with potentially momentous consequences.
We will move the American embassy to the eternal capital of the Jewish people, Jerusalem.
Israel recognizes Jerusalem as its capital. So do Palestinians. The disputed status of the city has driven every embassy from it. Israeli government data show 86 countries maintain their embassies in Tel Aviv. As of 2006, none are in Jerusalem. Since the 1967 war, Israel has administered the city, though the international community largely sees the ultimate status and control of Jerusalem still subject to negotiation.
We want peace, but if you will bring the American embassy to Jerusalem, we will have no peace here.
Palestinians argue a U.S. embassy in Jerusalem would legitimize Israeli control over the city and strip the United States of its ability to restart and broker peace negotiations between Israelis and Palestinians.
Moving the embassy to any place will be a step ahead of anything that may happen in the future and will damage the peace process.
The administration refuses to commit to the move as it says officials and President Trump are in the early stages of their decision making.
He wants to grow closer with Israel to make sure that it gets the full respect that it deserves in the Middle East.
Supporters of the move argue after years of failed peace negotiations, terrorist attacks, and war, it is time the United States fulfilled the policy of a 1995 law requiring a U.S. embassy to Israel in Jerusalem.
The United States of America has embassies in all of the world's capitals, with the exception of Israel. That's absurd.
Presidents Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama blocked the move, citing security concerns. That decision now belongs to President Donald Trump. President Abbas says he refuses to resume peace negotiations unless Israel halts its settlement construction in the West Bank. News from Israel this morning, the Israeli government has approved 2,500 additional units there.
All right, we posted, that's Rich Edson from Fox News. We posted on our Facebook a couple of weeks ago, maybe a week ago, an article by Daniel Horowitz talking about the international law in place regarding Israel. And not the least of which is the fact that they have every right to develop and build lands in East Jerusalem and Judea. That the whole claim has become morphed into something that is just untethered from reality. And I had to laugh, you know, when I heard the Palestinian rep saying that moving the embassy to Jerusalem will damage the peace process. Well, really? The peace process is so successful. You know, as it is not successful because there's been so much capitulation. I'm ready for strong moves and strong action. I imagine you are, too. And by the way, we know now that the Obama administration at the last minute, his last thing that he did was send the Palestinians $220 million. So now they're looking to see if they can stop that. It's just it's an amazing thing. Jerusalem, of course, is mentioned in the ancient texts by the Jews, not by the Muslims. They weren't even in existence when Jerusalem became the capital for the holy city for the Jews. It's the whole thing is ludicrous. We'll talk about it more. Well, there are lots more things to tell you, but I'm out of time. This is Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.